The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $1,500. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Well, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through this first hour on this Sunday night, the 13th day of September, after which I'll hand it off to Gary Harding and John Panarese for hour number two. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We've got a pretty good show lined up for you tonight. Up first, well, we were going to talk to Hall of Famer from the Chicago Cubs, Cy Young Award winner Ferguson Jenkins. We can't quite get a hold of him. I think he's traveling and maybe in the airport. We'll get a best of interview up for you in a second. And in the second half, we'll talk to another ace of the hill from the Cleveland Indians, the Boston Red Sox, and the New York Yankees, El Tiante. Luis Tiant will be with us. So just sit back and relax. Enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on WGBB. We've got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, Sports Talk 1240, where you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by and give us a look, and then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Sports Talk 1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, what I'm going to do now is introduce an interview I did a while back with Claudia Williams, who is the daughter of Ted Williams. I did an interview with her about a book she wrote about her father called Ted Williams, My Father, aptly titled. Very great interview. I'm going to play it for you right now. Brian, you have it queued up. We were going to bring you Ferguson Jenkins, one of the ace of the hills. We'll bring him to you another time. We'll speak to his agent and see what happened to him. But in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy this interview with Claudia Williams on WGBB Sports Talk 1240.
The one who is at odds with Fenway fans or the Boston Scribes. If you're looking for books on the man who was an American hero in two wars as a fighter pilot who gave a stirring speech at his induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown to champion the cause of the Negro League ball player, there are many, many volumes you can find. But if you're looking for a story about Ted Williams, the man, after the cheering stopped and he was alone with his thoughts and his family, there's some books that think they can tell us this, but there's really only one person who truly can, and that's our honored guest tonight, the daughter of the great Ted Williams, Claudia Williams. Claudia, welcome to the show.
That ever had. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Claudia. It's really a pleasure to have you tonight. Several things made me decide to try and get you on the show. The passing of Don Zimmer, because the Ted Williams Museum is now at Tropicana, the passing on of Tony Gwynn. I have so much Ted memorabilia at the house. I have a Gartland statue on the dresser. Of course, your book. I have some contacts at HarperCollins. If I may, before we start, I have a little story for you.
Yeah.
Okay. My parents lived in over in Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the old Walmart at the corner of Croft and Route 44.
Oh, my gosh. This is backyard. So, yes, I know exactly where you are.
Okay.
Yes.
This was in the early 90s. My parents used to tell me down there when I used to visit, the big story was Ted Williams lives in Citrus Hills. Now, it was the elusive Ted Williams. It was somewhere over there beyond the big hill as we drove down North O'Brien Highway. Somewhere over there lives Ted Williams. And then I got the call one day. They saw the kid in Walmart, the old Walmart, buying long underwear.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So They spotted him one day, and that was the big phone call I got. Now, I had given my father, as a present, a baseball signed on the sweet spot by the great Charlie Gehringer, the second baseman for the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah.
Well, what I didn't know is they had put it in the glove box, and they carried it with them for over a year.
Oh, boy.
Right. Now, lo and behold, one day, I don't know if you remember, there was a Winn-Dixie next to that Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, next to the to that Walmart at the Winn-Dixie, there was a payphone. And who was on that payphone but the splendid Splinter himself?
Oh, my goodness.
So my mother grabs the baseball out of the glove box, walks over, and waits for Ted to get off the telephone and asks him, "Mr. Williams, can you please sign this baseball for me?" So he says, "Oh, ma'am, it'll be my pleasure." So he signs the baseball. He sees Charlie Gehringer on it. He says, "You know, I'm in very good company on this baseball." And he proceeds to sign it to Bill. Best wishes, Ted Williams. He's as nice as can be. I'm sure if it was me, he would have chased me down the sidewalk. But
No.
Just my luck. But I did thank him. I think it was a couple of months later. He was at a card show at Hofstra University, and I was on the line. I was scared, stiff. And I said, "Mr. Williams, thank you so much. My parents met you at Walmart," and I forget what he said, but I was scared as anything. But I just wanted to tell you that story about very unpretentious the man was to be shopping for underwear at Walmart. No need to go down to Countryside Mall or International Plaza for him.
Yep, he was a very, non-pretentious, very casual guy. You know, if you watch carefully, he'd probably wear, the same style of khaki pants for about a week. They'd be different. They'd be clean, don't get me wrong. But when he found something he liked, he would be like, "I want a dozen of them."
And that,
so,
That's and one then, of the of points course, made in the book, exactly.
Yeah. And, the story, the fact that he lived here in Citrus Hills has been really a wonderful thing. It put Hernando on the map. Nobody knew where it was before, and now we have fishermen coming to Crystal River for tarpon fishing because Ted Williams lived in this area. And, we would have loved to have had his museum at Fenway or somewhere in Boston, but it's very understandable that real estate there is a high, high commodity. And to have his museum at the Tampa Bay Stadium is the best second home we could have hoped for, because the amount of people that we got in 1 month here in this small town of Hernando is the amount of people we get per day in Tampa.
Right.
So it's wonderful because it certainly deserves that kind of recognition, and the fans just adore it. It's becoming more and more popular. As you probably know, Bill, every year we use my father's same formula to induct the rookie of the year. We identify the top hitters of the year. And, we reach out to them and let them know that based on what our dad viewed as most important as a batter or a hitter, I should say, we would like to invite you into our museum. So it's been really nice all around on many different levels.
Definitely. I was at the opening of the museum when it was at the front gate there of Citrus Hills. I forget what year it was, in the early 90s. And that,
I think it was 94.
Right.
94.
I was at that event, and man, oh, man, with the searchlights and the tent. And that was the biggest thing to happen in Citrus County, I think, since the manatees swam in. Right?
There's no doubt. When that induction dinner happened every year, this town came alive, and I think it was in 94.
Yeah.
Might have been the second one, but President Bush showed up.
Yeah.
We had Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, I remember.
Yep. I mean, can you imagine Muhammad Ali? They were like, "Give us directions on how to get there because we don't know." And it was just fantastic. And Joe DiMaggio was here. It was great. It was wonderful for this area. It was wonderful for the residents that live here. And a lot of people have some very wonderful, fond memories of Dad and who he really was as a man, outside of the Green Diamond.
It was unbelievable. Now, Claudia, what made you feel that you wanted to write this book now? Was it anything to do with that Bradley book that came out a few months ago that you wanted to set the record straight?
You know what? It sure did. And I have, before I say anything further, I have a lot of respect for Ben Bradley. He has spent long time. He spent almost 10 years researching stats about my father. And that in itself is a great accomplishment. And he did. He found some wonderful things out. But so many biographers, and not just Ben Bradley, have tried so hard to portray my father as the man, as the person. What made this man tick? And they just can't do it, Bill. Mm-hmm. And when they use their own opinion, when they haven't even met my father, as credible and as the authority, I have to step in and defend my family.
Okay.
Because it, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
As well as I know you, I will never know you as well as your wife, as well as your daughter or your son. I don't know if you have children, but there's no way. And if I've never met you, how can I even do that?
Right.
You know, and so there was just something, and it wasn't just Ben Bradley. There were other biographers and journalists, and I just said, this is my duty. This is my moral obligation to defend my loved ones, my family, because they just don't get it. So that's why I did it. And quite frankly, there's one other reason, and it's one that I addressed right away in the beginning of the book. My dear mother suffered a stroke in 2008, and she was diagnosed with dementia. And every day, every year, she forgets more memories. And I encourage everybody out there to write their book, because you know what? We're all going to forget. And I see it happening with my own mom. And when I finished this book, I gave it to my mom, and I said, Mom, if you read this, you'll never forget. Just keep reading. Just keep remembering these stories, because this is our family. And not many people will ever know these stories.
Beautiful point, Claudia. Exactly. Excellently told. Now, one of the beautiful things you bring out that really, got to me was the Fenway Park Old Timers game in 1982. You were a little girl. You missed the whole roaring of the crowd days. Tell us about that Fenway Park Old Timers game.
Bill, I got to tell you, it's one of the fondest memories I have of my father. Up until about the age of 10 years old, I thought that my dad was the world's best fisherman. Okay?
Right.
I was up in Canada. I'd be watching him fish. I would be in the Keys on the flats watching him fish. And this man was an artist in action. I mean, I would watch him and be like, he is such a perfectionist. Everything he does is so meticulous, so deliberate. Okay? So when I hear finally that we're going to go see a baseball game, which in my mind all boys play baseball, that Dad happened to have played baseball when he was younger, I was more excited to see my brother on the baseball field because he was a honorary baseball, bat boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we go to Fenway. It was 1982 May. It's an old timers game, and we get there. And, of course, the announcer announces all these players that were on Dad's team, and they never say the name first because they're always testing the crowd to see if they know who the player is. And every time the announcer would say some stats about the player, I was impatient. I would tug on my mom's jacket, and I was like, Is that Dad? And no, it wasn't Dad. It would be Dommy, or it would be Johnny Pesky, or it'd be Bobby Doerr. So finally, he gets to a player. Played in left field, outfield, left field, you know, and it starts saying all these stats. And then the last thing I hear, Bill, is that he says, and this man served our country, served 2 hitches in the Marines. And that's the last thing I hear. And I am absolutely swallowed up by thousands of people. And I'm a little girl. Everybody stands up. I can't even see the field, okay? I don't even see my father exit the dugout.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel the electricity in the whole air, and I get goosebumps just talking about it to you right now. It ran up the back of my head, and I look up at my mom. I can't hear a thing. She looks down at me, and she yells, "That's Daddy," and she picks me up. She puts me on her shoulders, And I look out in the field, and he's standing there amongst all his teammates. And I got to tell you, he seemed huge to me. He seemed larger than life. And I realized at that point, he wasn't just a phenomenal fisherman.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. And there he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, larger than life. Unbelievable.
Really was.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the greatest things about writing this book. I'll admit, I'm the first one to admit, actually, I didn't know a lot about baseball. I knew the main numbers that Daddy had. I knew the main records. I knew that he, you know, his home runs on average, all that kind of stuff. But writing this book, I rediscovered not only all the lessons that he taught us as children, but how they applied to the way he played baseball, okay? This man did not do anything unless his full heart and his full soul and his full dedication was in it, okay? And he demanded that of his children. He hated mediocrity. And he told us, I hope I can swear on the show, but I'll edit if I can't. He said, if you're not trying your ass off to be the best at it, then why the hell are you doing it?
Sure.
Now think about that.
Wow.
That's a lesson. It's a shame that more people don't approach things in whatever they're doing with that attitude. Think about how much better things would be and what a higher standard we'd live by. And that's exactly what our father taught us.
And I
no
can
matter
see
what
him
we do,
saying that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
Now, let me
ask you about the famous Williams temper. Now, did you ever see it coming? And did you ever do anything to maybe assuage it?
Boy, I tell you what, If there's one thing, Bill, I could brag about myself, this would be it. I became an excellent forecaster of my father's temperament. Okay, I don't know if it's because I share his genes. I don't know if it's because I was his daughter. I don't know, and I tried desperately, there's no doubt, in my young years to get his attention. But when I figured him out and I realized that when he did get mad and he did explode and he threw out swears like you've never heard before, that they really weren't directed towards me, I figured him right out. And I was able to diffuse it or let it just roll off my back and not be like, you know, hurt and then run off to a corner and cower. No. It was just static. After a while, it was like, oh, that's just Dad looking for attention. But, yes, did he have a temper? Absolutely. And did he swear? If there was a Hall of Fame for swearing, he'd be the first inductee, though. But when you get to this is the point I try so desperately to make in this book. When you truly know someone, you know their fabric so that when they do act a certain way, it doesn't affect you the way it would someone who has seen it for the first time. If you only saw Ted Williams erupt one time and walked away, you'd say, geez, that guy's got some issues, you know? But when you've seen it, you know, growing up, and you realize what it really truly means, it's like no other small flaw that someone has, you know? And it became just part of his character. And it actually became a beautiful part of his character. You know why? Because it showed his passion. He could not do anything without feeling it to the depths of his soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that from Ted for sure. Now, I'd like to let the folks know that in this book, there are some amazing, never-before-seen photos, some that I've really enjoyed. There are some people that you wouldn't be surprised to see Ted with. And then, although from Boston, there are some that you would be surprised to see Ted with. So I advise that people pick up this book and look at the photos. Now, sharing Dad with the public must have been a real chore. I pride myself, Claudia, and we're speaking with Claudia Williams tonight, the daughter of the great Ted Williams, that I know where stump knockers. I know where both stump knockers are. Speak about how hard it is to share the great Ted Williams with the public and how hard it is to go out in public and have people grabbing at Ted and wanting a piece of him when really he belongs to you.
You know what? It's a very fine line. I know that there are many fans out there that just adore Dad. And I also know that it is those same fans that helped Dad to the level of fame that he achieved, okay? And I respect that and I admire that. But as children growing up, we had limited time as it was with our dad. So when we were with him, it was like we were selfish. We wanted him for us because our time with him was limited. And don't forget, when he had John Henry and I, he was in his 50s, okay? The world or his fans already had a good 20 years, 30 years of his attention. But now his two children are there, and we want it. And we only got to celebrate him for maybe 25, 30. So that sense of urgency to spend as much quality time with our father definitely was apparent when we went out in public because, as I told in one story, it felt like a feeding frenzy. You know, people would just come swarming in and just want so badly to make a contact with him or connect with him. But I will say this, Bill, the older I got, I actually learned to appreciate it, and I'll tell you why, because there was such an overwhelming feeling of love for my dad from these people. There was such an overwhelming feeling of pride for who he was as an American. And I'll tell you what, I had seen more than one time an African American come up to my father with tears in his eyes and thank my father for having the courage to stand up during his moment in history, when he was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame, to take that moment to recognize Negro League players. Who does that, Bill?
Right.
Who does that anymore in life, okay? Daddy had no other incentive. He did it on his own. He took the time. The Hall of Fame itself, before he went out to give his speech, asked him, please, you know, we would prefer if you don't mention the Negro League players because, you know, what happened in 1963, right? Martin Luther King had just given his I Have a Dream speech. So barely 3 years later, Ted Williams is on the podium about to be inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And what does he do? He mentions the likes of Josh Gibson, Satchel Paige, and then he ends his induction speech by not only recognizing Willie Mays, who had, I think, the day before, maybe 2 days before, hit a home run that surpassed Daddy's 521, and not only recognized him, but encouraged him and told him to keep going and that he was pulling for him. Okay? That's huge.
Definitely. And that, speaking of the Negro Leagues and African Americans, Jim Mudcat Grant has a great comment about Ted on the book's jacket. And speaking also of being a great, great American, talk about the great day that Ted received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, Claudia. And one thing that I recognized about that day, which is a rarity, is that Ted is wearing a necktie.
I know. You know what? My brother and I sat down after that day, and we figured out that Dad wore a tie in his, let's say, public life, because we're not sure about high school and what he had to do in school. But as far as his public life was concerned, Daddy wore a tie 3 times in his life, okay? And that was the 3rd time. And it was a tie that John Henry gave him because the tie that Daddy pulled out looked like he came from the 1940s and looked like maybe Moth had a bite or two out of it. And John Henry was like, Dad, that's so out of style. Wear mine. So, yes, that was... He brought up a great story because if the old timers game is my fondest memory, this has got to be my second, if not my first, because I tell you what, I don't have any children, Bill, but I felt like the proudest parent in that crowd. I was watching. I didn't take my eyes off my father, and I could not have been more proud of him when he received that award. And I just, oh. It brings tears to my eyes because I know what it meant to him. I know how close he was with President Bush. They were truly good friends. Politics aside, they were buddies. They were flight buddies.
Mm-hmm.
They were fishing buddies. And my dad had a wonderful opportunity to stay in the Lincoln Room in the White House. And in the middle of the night, here comes the president, right? He knocks on the door, and he's like, Ted, come here. I want to show you something. and they go into some other room, and the President of the United States pulls open this drawer, okay, and there's over 5,000 handmade flies in these drawers, okay, from we're talking 200 years before. The history of all the ties that have ever been.
All right, that's Claudia Williams. The book is called Ted Williams, My Father. You guys can hear the remainder of that interview on our website, sportstalk1240.com. Next up, we'll talk to the great El Tiante. Louis Tiant will join us after the break on Sports Talk 1240. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you. I hope you had a great weekend. Pennant races all across the city. Football starting up, the Jets with a nice win over the Cleveland Browns, the Giants playing as we speak, and I hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240 tonight. Well, my next guest pitched 19 years primarily for the Cleveland Indians and the Boston Red Sox, also for the New York Yankees. He became a member of the Boston Red Sox Hall of Fame in 1997. He was a three-time All-Star and a four-time 20-game winner, winning 229 games total. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Luis Tiant. Luis, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. How you doing, sir?
All right. It's great to have you with us tonight. Now,
Thank you.
Your dad, Luis, was a great left-hand pitcher for the in the Negro Leagues for the New York Cubans, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, Talk a little bit about his time in the Negro Leagues. Did he face in any of the great Negro League players?
Oh, yeah. He faced everybody. He pitching against Sanchez Pay and, Larry Doby, Minnie Mignoso, a lot of those guys.
Excellent. Okay.
And that what I heard, most of the guys, they used to play with him or against. Some of them, they was my coaches and managing the winter ball.
And
they used to tell me, you good, but your father was better than you. That's what they used to tell me. Well, it's good.
Now, he had a great screwball, correct? Great screwball, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Now, your talent was recognized by Bobby Avila from the Cleveland Indians.
Yes.
Now, under his recommendation, Cleveland picked you up, but there was a problem in Cuba, as we know. Fidel Castro's regime was coming up. Heightened tensions following the Bay of Pigs invasion, and it was impossible for you to return to Cuba back home, right?
Well, that year I was in Cuba. That was the last year we played winter ball.
Uh-huh.
1960-61, that was the last year.
Right.
And, you know, and then Bay of Pigs coming in that time, I think it was in January. And I supposed to come back to Mexico and play in the Mexican League in February, and they canceled them all the flights. And I can't leave. I have to stay in Cuba like a month and a half, and I don't get out till May 25th. You know, and, you know, I thought I'm never going to come back. I'll never get out, you know. But, you know, thank you, God. I'm coming in the first play. The first plane, when they open it, people can come out on the first flight. I get out.
You got out, okay.
Yeah, and then they got one more flight, and then they canceled it for everybody. Nobody can leave the country.
And that was it, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, you progressed pretty nicely through the Indian system.
Yep.
You started with Charleston, then you went to Burlington, North Carolina.
Yes.
Now, you
yep.
encountered some problems there. Like I read that you said you didn't speak very good English, but you were able to understand racism.
Oh, yeah.
And you encountered that down in North Carolina.
Yeah, that's, well, you know, I mean, that's what it was in those years, you know. That's, I think, it maybe was one of the reasons my father don't wanted me to play baseball. They wanted me to go to school, stay in the school. Even they sent me to American school in Cuba to learn, and I go for 2 years, and then I quit, you know.
Right.
Look at what I wound up. But, you know, when... Your father used to play baseball. He played like a 25-year professional. And they don't want you to play, you know. And then you start thinking about when you're a kid, well, he played where he don't wanted me to play. And because of my mother, he let me play. She told him, yeah, look, if he want to play, let him play.
Right.
And, you know, and I think then when I come in here in 1962, I was in Charleston, West Virginia. I was in 63 in Burlington, North Carolina, you know, and I can see why was the reason he don't wanted me to play.
Exactly, because of the way
He go through a lot of stuff, a lot of things they telling you, they do to you. You know, it was really sad, you know, for us, because, you know, was treated like a human being.
That's the way they treated, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's
and
a
it
shame.
It was tough. It was tough for us, and that's... And that's where the young kid now, they don't understand it, what we have to go through.
Exactly.
You know? And you telling, I talked to some of them and explaining things, and they don't believe it. They say, are you kidding me? I said, no, I don't get it. That's
right.
What we used to do. You know, like we used to go in the row, and the white players, when we stopped to eat, they're the one that had to go inside the restaurant and get the food and bring it to the bus. That's the only way we can eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stay in the nice hotel. We have to go to the black session, you know. And that's all kind of thing. And then you go in the ballpark, and your own people, your own fans call you anything.
Right.
Whatever they will feel like it, they call you anything. And then nothing you can do about it.
No. That was the sign of the times in those days, Luis, unfortunately.
Yep.
We're speaking to Luis Dion tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, July 1964, Luis, was your debut in the major leagues for Cleveland.
Yep.
You had a nice game, 4 hits, 11 strikeouts, 3-0 shutout against the defending champion New York Yankees. You remember that game?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I remember like it was today. I'm pitching again Whitey Ford.
Exactly.
He have in that time.
Whitey Ford, yeah, not too bad.
Yeah.
You finished that rookie season 10-4, the 2.83 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad.
Yeah. And then, you know, when I coming from Manoli, I was in Triple A 15-1. That's when they called me.
They brought you up, 15-1 record in the minors, and that got you a ticket to the bigs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, 68 really was the breakthrough year, though. Now, that's when you altered your delivery. So that turn away from home plate delivery, that motion, the hesitation pitch. Talk a little bit why you altered your delivery like that, Luis.
Oh, well, 68, what I used to do, you know, I mean, I used to throw 97, 98.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, what I used to do, I chose the hitter, the number. And then I throw side down, three quarter, overhand. And I throw only three pitches, slider, curve, changer, you know, fastball for all angles. And I'm making it difficult for the hitters. And that's where I think that year was my best year in the big league.
Right.
You know, I win 21 games and lose 9 and 1.60 ERA.
Exactly. Yeah, 1.60 ERA. So it was more or less a change in your velocity.
Yeah. Yeah, but like I said, I used to throw hard. You see?
Right.
And we have the best top pitcher in the major league that year. You know, Sam McDowell, Sonny Siever, Steve Harger, myself, Gary Bell. You know, and every place we go, we're making it difficult for the hitters.
Right. Great staff, you know, yeah, with Sudden yeah. Sam, Steve Hargan, yeah. Sonny mm-hmm. Siebert. Yeah, great staff yeah. in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Now,
you had
four consecutive shutouts. The only four mm-hmm. other pitchers in the era did that, with Drysdale, Gibson, Hershiser, mm-hmm. and Gaylord Perry. Not bad company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I struck out 32 batters in 2 games. And that's, I think, that's what the record for the major league.
Yeah.
You know, 32 struck out. Mm-hmm. I struck out 19 batters in 10 innings. I struck out the last 3. You know, I win 1-0 against Minnesota.
Against Minnesota, exactly. That's a record for a 10-inning game.
Yeah.
And that 1.60 ERA that you had in 68 was the lowest in the American League since Walter Johnson.
But
Walter Johnson was in the dead ball era.
Yeah. That was 1906 when he did that.
1919.
Someplace around there.
That was the year of the Black Sox.
Yeah.
And, I guess eclipsed later by Gibson in 68, 1.12.
He was bad.
not too shabby.
No, he was bad. He was my hero. You know, he can pitch. That man, he can pitch. I mean, he was tough.
Talk a little bit, Luis, about Sam McDowell. He had a couple of problems, but he could throw smoke like nobody else.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see nobody throw hard at him, even including Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see nobody throw hard at him. And then they were 6'8", he got a good fastball, man, 105 mile per hour fastball, slider, curve, a hell of a change.
Yeah.
And I tell you, for me, it was the best pitch, baseball. And this is the best pitch I never see in my time.
Very underrated. Sam McDowell.
But he could be one of the best left-handed pitchers in the era of baseball, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I guess they never put him together the way he's supposed to.
Right.
And that was a problem with him.
To me, it was a shame.
To me, he was the best pitcher I see, I tell you.
Now you
the hitter don't want to face him. I can tell you.
No,
I know that.
No, yeah.
No. And then he was wide too. You know.
Yeah, you don't want to get hit by Sam.
No.
Now you went to the Twins, Luis, in 1970. You had a couple of injuries in '69, multiplayer deal that brought Dean Chance and Greg Nettles to the Indians. You fractured your scapula. Which for folks that don't know, is up in the neck there.
Yeah.
You showed some promise in 71, but you were released. But you played with one of your Cuban buddies, Tony Oliva. And Tony Oliva is another guy that deserves Hall of Fame mention.
Oh, yeah.
Talk a little bit about Tony Oliva.
Well, in my era, he was a bad hit, actually.
Great hitter.
I played in 1970 with him. He was unbelievable. I tell you. I mean, Carew, he's a great hitter. He's Hall of Fame. But Tony Oliva, to me, was the best hitter. He can hit left-handed, right-handed, no matter where you throw the ball. And he don't run like a Carew. Carew maybe have a 50, 60 hit a year, bound the ball.
Right.
Tony, he never bound the ball because he can run that fast. And then he just land right to everybody. And to me, he was the best hitter in that time.
A great pure hitter.
And I believe in he should be in the Hall of Fame. No matter what people say, I don't know who bought him for. And that's crazy, the way they're doing those things now. You know, it's unbelievable. Like, they're forgetting us, what you did. They forget me. They forget Concepcion. They forget Lee Smith, Gene Catt, Tommy Young. You know, I mean, it's amazing. What
Gil Hodges.
Doing. Yeah, yeah, a lot of guys. You
yeah.
Know? And then, like I said, why, like they do to Ron Santos, why you wait till he die? Vinny Mignoso should be in there, and he now he died.
A good
you
point.
No, he missing for 1 point. He missing for 1 point, one vote.
Right.
How are you going to do that? Man? To me, I think that's wrong. I don't know who those people voting. I don't want to say point the finger to anybody because I know every player in the big league and the Hall of Fame vote. You know, some don't. Some there's a bunch of them can vote.
No,
but
some don't.
To
yeah.
Me, yeah. To me, whoever vote, that's a crazy thing, too, but they do. Why you wait till people die? Like, especially when Ron Santos.
That's a
he
shame.
He don't play no more. He don't play no more after he retired. He don't play no more. He don't put in a better record, a world record, whatever they want to call him. And they know he was sick. You know, he losing both legs.
Right.
Jesus Christ. Why you wait till he die and then you put him in the Hall of Fame after that? What good is that?
Right, his wife has to give the acceptance speech.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
What good is that? I mean, you bring a grief to your family. You know, you can't enjoy it no more because you already passed away. You know, that's the time for you to enjoy. And after you play that many years, you put the numbers.
I agree.
You should be in the Hall of Fame.
Excellent point, Luis.
And I don't get it. I don't get it what they're trying to do. Man, it's unbelievable. He's got 22 pitches in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And I got a better record than all the same. And the guy win more games than me. They lose more games. I got a better ERA. I got a more complete game. I got a more strikeout. I got more cheddar. How you can do that?
I don't understand.
I just don't get it. Like I told my family, I told my wife, I told my kids, if they pull me after I die, don't show up.
Yeah.
Don't go nowhere.
Right.
No, don't
yeah.
go. Don't go.
Right.
You don't
yeah.
have to go no place. Don't go.
I'm glad you spoke about it because I was going to ask you about it anyway.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's wrong. To me, it's wrong. And the guys both, I don't know what they're thinking about it. I don't know what they do. I don't know what kind of heart they have. Because they don't have no feeling to me. If people do those things, they don't have no feeling in their heart. That's bad.
Excellent
okay?
point.
And like I say, I don't want to point the thinking to the other guy in the Hall of Fame because a lot of these guys don't vote.
Exactly.
But the guy vote, what are you thinking? What are you doing? Well, you see my record? You see the other guy's record? You know, you have to look in the record, what you do. You know, you spend 19 years almost in the big league.
Right.
And I do my job.
Right. Now you do yours.
I win 220 games, 29 games, like you say, and everything. You know, I got the numbers to be in the Hall of Fame because it's 22 pitches in the Hall of Fame. I got a better record than them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a crazy thing. I just can't understand. I mean, I don't take it.
I can see it's a bitter pill to swallow, Luis.
Yeah,
I understand.
I'm not taking anything for anybody. I don't say this guy not should be in here, this guy not should be in there. No. They should be in there, but I think we should be in there.
Right.
You know, if they're there, we should be in there because they don't have no better record than we do. You know, and that's wrong. That's why I can't understand what this guy is thinking.
That's
I don't
a shame.
Know what they do. And they say, yeah, you're right. It's a real change.
It is.
What they do.
Well, we have to hope for next time. That's all we have to do.
Yeah, well, you know, I hope God give me a life. The what they've been doing now, still alive. You know, and that's
right.
All I care. You know, what to me, people, everybody I see, fans, people, radio, TV, they're talking about it. I should be in it. Even, you know, the Major League channel, the other channel, they do, what are you calling, the ESPN.
Right.
You know, when they're not putting me in there, I saw the guy talk. I said, no, that's bad. That's embarrassing what they do. I should be in there. Tony Oliva should be in there. Mini Mignoso should be in there. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's crazy. It's a really crazy what happened, what they go. I don't know what happened. But
that's
amazing.
If it was up to the people.
Yeah, but like I'm telling people, you know, I tell you the truth. Don't get me wrong. I want to be in the Hall of Fame because I got the number, and I deserve to be there. I'm working my butt out for a long time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Coming from another country, coming here, not speaking the language, go through what you have to go through. And that's not easy to matter, to making those adjustments. You know, you're not speaking the language. People, they squeeze you out, you know, calling your name, telling you all kind of things, discriminate you. You have to go through all those things. You jumping all those things,
right,
and show the people what you can do. And the color of the skin don't have nothing to do with anything. You can do like everybody else. You get the opportunity and the other people have.
Well, if it was up to the people in Boston, Luis, you'd be in the Hall of Fame because you were a big fan favorite in Boston. You became El Tiante. Mm-hmm. You excelled in the postseason. How about the World Series in 1975?
Yeah, well, it was great. You know, it was great. I think it was my best time. You know, separate at 68 year, but that year was the best because my mom and dad coming.
Exactly.
See me pitch.
They brought your mom and dad from Cuba.
Yeah. And there was I never thought I was gonna see him again. Then my father never see me pitch, and he saw me. You know, my mother, and you know, and, it really was a great time, a great year for me. You know, and I know I don't complain. Like I say, fans show me respect, fans show me love, appreciation for what I did. You know, and I did it on the game, outside the game.
Right.
Okay, and that's the thing. I don't get it. What do you have to do?
Yeah.
You know, because they say, well, you taking drugs, you do this, you be in jail, you be your wife, you do. I never do any of those things. I just go and play the game.
And you did.
The way I learned to play the game.
How about your time with the Yankees, Luis?
Yeah.
How'd you enjoy your time in New York?
It was good. George was good to me. Believe me, I tell you, it was good to me. He used to call me old man. he was good to me. He took care of me. He sit down with me and he told me what he wanted me to do, what he gonna do, how he gonna sign me.
Yeah.
And then he told me to come back and to Boston and talk to these people here, because he don't want making any problem, anything like that. And they really take care of me. I tell you the truth. They take care of me.
How about Billy Martin?
But like I tell you, my heart is here. It's in Boston. No question about it. It has to be. I pitch it longer here. The fans, like I say, they're good to me. They show me love, appreciation. And still, even I don't play no more for 40 years, a long time. Less than that, a little bit, maybe 30 years. The fans are still good to me. You know, wherever I go, people good to me, you know, and that's the thing. I don't think that you just do for what you do in the field.
Right.
You know, it's something that people stick it with you because they like the way you do things, they like you pitch, and they like you go to the game, the way you about the game, you know, you play the game, and that's the thing. I'm happy with it. You know, I can say, and I can tell you, and that's it for the bottom of my heart.
How was
I never thought I'm going to do what I did.
Right.
I had to thank God every day of my life to what he let me do. He gave me the strength. They give me the dignity. They give me the power to do things. Nobody believing on me. No have to believe in nobody. What people talk. I don't think you can do this. I don't think you can do that. You know, and that's what the same people sometimes don't get it. You know, and that's like I said, after you going through all those things, now you sit and you say, well, maybe I have a chance to someday be in the Hall of Fame, and then
right.
all these things happen. You know, it's crazy. And now what I say is, my Hall of Fame is my family. That's my first thing. This is my Hall of Fame.
That's a beautiful way to look at it, Luis. Yeah.
My kids, my wife. I've been married for 54 years. We're great.
54 years?
Yeah, 54 years.
That's amazing.
We just turned 54 years.
That's beautiful.
August 12th, you know. And the thing is that, God been good to me. Maybe... not for the Hall of Fame. I don't think it's God. It's this guy is in there.
Yeah.
Okay? No God. God don't have nothing to do with that.
No.
That's the way I guess it is. That's what I'm going to be. That's what I'm going to be.
You got to keep up hope, Luis. I just wanted to ask you, you were with the Yankees when they lost Thurman Munson, weren't you, Luis?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bad day.
Yeah.
And then the problem was we're going to Ohio and bury him in the morning.
Yeah.
And then that night we have a game.
Oh, boy.
And I had to pitch in that game. And I lose it 1-0. And I want to win that game so bad, just for him.
Yeah.
But he was a great person. He and me, we get along great. He was a player kid. He crazy, do things around, you know, making you laughing. And plus, it was a good player. It was a good catcher. Hustling, he can hit, you know, and we get along great. And that's one thing I asked God, let me win this game for him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you're standing in the mound and you look in the scoreboard and you see his face in there, everybody cry, I cry, you know. And that day, you know, his name? Bobby Mercer.
Right.
He passed away, he don't play.
Yeah.
Lupinella no play, Granero no play, you know, and I'm losing the game 1-0.
What a shame.
It was a shame, really, because I really want to win that game for him. Because he deserved that, and he deserved it more, because he was a great person.
Quickly, I want to ask you, Luis, about Billy Martin.
Who?
Billy Martin. How was it playing
Billy,
for Billy?
He was good to me, too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have no problem with him. I like it, the way he managed it. He was a smart man. He know the game well. And he's a guy, no afraid to making any move. He do what he had to do. He was the boss in the field. Okay? If you don't play, he puts you on the bench.
Right.
And he don't care who you are. You see, he don't go and kissing anybody in this and because you're a superstar. And you don't play, they're taking you out of the game. And they put somebody out.
Simple as that.
And that's simple as that.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, we talk, and he come in the office a few times and tell me, you know what? I only need you give me 7 innings, and I bring in Gussie. That's all I need for you. Give me 7 innings, and we're fine. And he loved me. I mean, he talked to me all the time. You know, when he used to have the store, boots, a hat. He asked me one day, are you like a cowboy boot and a cowboy hat? I said, yeah. I said, okay, what size you use? That, okay. Next day, he bring me two pair of boots, two hats, extension, cowboy. It cost like $150.
Nice.
The hat and the boot cost about $800.
Ooh.
You know, and he bring him, give it to me. And then he told me, you come into my store, you go and get whatever you want to get. You know, that's how good he was to me, and that's why I have a lot of respect for him. Even he passed away.
Great man.
He was the greatest.
All right, Luis. Well, I tell you, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight. We're going to keep up hope for those Hall of Fame dreams. Thanks for taking the time to be with us tonight. Everybody's been looking forward to hearing from you, and I thank you again, Luis.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talking to you and talking to the fans. And just want to say God bless you, everybody. And, you know, making a better world anytime we can, and living better and take care of ourselves.
You take care, Luis. Luis Tejon,
okay.
Folks.
Okay, well, thank you.
That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guest, Luis Tejon, and you for joining us. Stay tuned for Hour 2 with Gary Harding and John Panarese up next on Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you on Sunday, September 27th, with James Murray of Impractical Jokers. Till then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.